Hey, it's just me, Lizzie, here this time. Valerie is taking some time to focus on making the world a better place by running for her town's council. We hope to be back together here again soon. Having said that, it's good to be here with you all. I'm excited to share the story of a friend of mine, a woman I've known from afar for many years. She and I were both blogging and running and birthing babies alongside each other on opposite ends of the country, and I always admired her love and enthusiasm for her family, motherhood, nature, and life. As our lives got more full, however, I'd almost lost track of her. But then, last year, I saw a post from her with a little tiny onesie and hashtagged 45 and pregnant. I thought, I need to hear this story. It was, of course, much more interesting and nuanced and deep and painful and beautiful than even an astute observer of Facebook could know. And I'm grateful to her for sharing her time and her thoughts and feelings about so many things, from information overload and the blessings of uncertainty, to navigating complicated feelings about both bodies and faith. Here she is.
So I'm Taisha Carter. I live in Seattle, Washington. I'm mom to six. My oldest is 14 and youngest is 3 months. Had the first five within 8 years. And then we have a bit of a gap at the end. Almost 6 years. Growing up, I was one of those like little kids who loved kids myself, like babies. I remember being in kindergarten and first grade, and I had a next door neighbor. I actually had a single mom, and so it was just me and my twin sister at the time. And I remember our neighbor from our apartment building were a newlywed couple, and they had a toddler and a baby, and I was just in heaven because this mother, she would let me come over and just hold the baby. And I actually have my very first babysitting job at 7 years old. She left me with the baby for like an hour, knowing my mom was next door. So yeah, I always loved kids. I knew I wanted to have a lot of kids growing up. I used to kind of joke I wanted to have 10 planned out so that we'd have a birthday every month of the year. And then, yeah, I just kind of always envisioned like growing up and being a mom. It really is what I wanted to do.
Taisha's mom did get remarried, and she and her husband created a yours, mine, and ours family, with the ours being a baby sister 5 years younger than the other siblings.
I was the oldest, well, me and my twin sister, but I was 13 years older than her, and I kind of was the second mom. Like, I quit doing extracurricular activities at school because I wanted to come home and play with the baby, and I think I would wake up before my parents did at night, and I would go get her a bottle and put her back to sleep. I mean, I just loved taking care of her.
Taisha's childhood fantasies of motherhood got a later start than her little self would have hoped. She was 30 when she and her husband Jacob got married, and by then she had lived enough to know she probably needed to revise her plan.
So we decided with our timing, like, we would probably be lucky to have about 4 kids if we were to have them by the time we were 40. And for some reason, I think we had in our heads like 40 was the magic age to like stop. My very first pregnancy was an early miscarriage. So that was a little bit disheartening because I think in my mind, I did think I was older, and I always heard all the, you know, scary things of, oh, your fertility is going to go down the drain in your 30s. And so I was kind of nervous, like, well, what if we can't have kids?
This fear of infertility, waning fertility, secondary infertility is something that seemed to weigh on Taisha's mind frequently throughout her life. Thankfully, the disappointment from this first miscarriage was short-lived.
The next cycle, I got pregnant again, and we had our first baby. After that, you know, I was like, what about secondary infertility? But no problem. My husband kind of joked, like, if I just look at you, you get pregnant. So we got to be careful there. But we had the 4. Luckily, I had the 4th when I was like 37. A couple months before I turned 38. So we figured we might as well try for another one. So we had her, our 5th, about 3 weeks before my 40th birthday. And I was feeling so excited that we got her. Like, I felt like she was kind of like a bonus. But I still really wanted to have one more.
After their 5th baby was born, they decided to take some time off from thinking about possibly having another. Jacob was changing jobs, they were moving across the country, and it just didn't seem like the thing to be focusing on.
But once we got kind of semi-settled, I'm fairly certain that I had like another very early miscarriage that was unplanned. And that got us both thinking, like, oh, are we really done? Like, are we going to do something now to make it final, or are we going to just be open to what might happen? And so we, at that point, we both decided, actually, surprisingly, because my husband would have been okay being done. Like, he would have been fine and satisfied with that. But he knew that I wanted another one. And then after that loss, what I considered a loss, even though I didn't have a pregnancy test to tell me it was a loss, we just decided, yeah, one more would be good.
And that is when, as Taisha put it, a different journey began. It's impossible to know what would have happened if they had decided their family was complete with five children. But if Taisha had known what was to come, it may have swayed things for her.
So once we kind of decided we were both on board for trying for another one, it probably took about 8 months to get pregnant. And then I finally did, and we were really excited, and I just felt like, oh, this feels like really right for our family. Even the kids would say things like, we feel like someone's missing, you know, like those little things that I felt like, okay, this is it.
But then at 9 weeks, Taisha went in for an ultrasound. The tech couldn't say much, but suggested that because the baby was measuring closer to 7 weeks, the dates could be off. And there was no heartbeat. Taisha's heart sank.
That was the first time that I experienced a silent miscarriage. Like, I had had multiple miscarriages throughout, you know, getting to having the five. I'd had, I think, three early miscarriages, but they were all very, like, straightforward and early on, and but this one was different.
When she met with her midwife to discuss what to do next, they told her she could either have a D&C procedure or she could wait for her body to take care of it naturally.
And so I was, like, all about the natural thing. So I'm like, let's just wait and see. That was what they called it, wait and see. So the waiting part was excruciating. I mean, we waited until 13 weeks, like almost a month after I knew the baby wasn't growing. And I was just waiting. It was like I was walking around just knowing this. And it was like a secret. Like, my husband knew, but I wasn't telling everyone. You know, my mind was kind of in this place around my family. And we did things like go on a strenuous hike to try to induce the miscarriage. And it was just something that I guess I hadn't considered with miscarriage. I think because I'd had early straightforward miscarriages, I never knew that there were people that had these silent missed miscarriages that had to go through weeks or even months of a miscarriage. Eventually, it got to the point where the midwife said, well, you know, it's been so long that you're at a higher risk of having an infection, so we need to do something about it. So they referred me back to my OB, and then we did the pill at home, which was not too bad, but something that no one would want to do, right? So that was that. I was devastated.
Taisha grieved over this loss, and grieved and grieved. It was an awakening for her that even early in the pregnancy, your body, your mind, your heart, your hormones have already done a lot to prepare to have a baby, and that even at that early stage, a loss can trigger a serious case of postpartum depression.
I was like, okay, postpartum depression can hit people that don't have the baby with them either, right? Like, your body's gone through it all. Your body has still gone through these changes, and your hormones are fluctuating, and you can still feel that even if you didn't go through a full pregnancy. So that was kind of surprising to me. And I muddled through it. Like, I wore sunglasses when I picked the kids up from school. It was really rough. I would say for an entire year, it was just kind of rough, like grieving in a way that I had never really grieved before. I mean, I had lost people I loved, like my grandparents, but it was just something I hadn't experienced before. And I had this like ache in my heart, and I would say, like, I would try to do well during the day, and at night, though, is when I would let myself cry or whatever, and I would say, my heart hurts. Like, my heart really hurt. Sometimes I felt like I couldn't breathe.
As months went by and Taisha didn't get pregnant again, she continued to grieve, and eventually came the holiday season, and it became even more difficult to muddle through as she thought of the baby that had been due on Christmas Eve.
It was kind of like I could sort of get by, but then once that holiday season was around the corner, it was just horrible. Like, a Christmas song would come on the radio And I would just lose it. Like, it was kind of hard.
But time passed, and after about a year, Taisha was feeling a little better. She was 43 at this point, and acknowledged that she and Jacob were just older. Her midwives reminded her that while she could fall pregnant, it would get less and less likely as time went on. Together, she and Jacob decided they would take the approach that if it happened, it happened. But if it didn't, they wouldn't take any significant steps, like IVF, to have another baby.
It took another 9 months and I did get pregnant again. So I was thinking the chances of having another miscarriage are probably lower. At least everything I read said to have consecutive miscarriages isn't normal, especially like a missed miscarriage, right? Like what I'd had. So I was feeling like optimistic, like, okay, maybe this is it. It's going to work out. In fact, I was feeling pretty good.
It happens that this new pregnancy coincided with a few things. First, the onset of the pandemic, and second, and more significantly, a turning point in a faith crisis that Taisha had been grappling with for a few years.
I'll be honest, like, I had been going for several years through kind of like a, some might call it like a faith crisis. My faith was shifting, and it had been for quite a long time, but definitely the miscarriage didn't help. I had stopped praying, which is something that I had a habit of doing throughout my life. And so at one point we normally would go to church, and it was canceled because of COVID, because they didn't know what was going on. It was all new. And so we decided, let's take a ferry over to Whidbey Island, which is one of our neighboring islands here in Seattle. And let's just like have a nature day with the kids. And so we went for a little hike, and we were just playing on the beach. And I just noticed, like, I normally would look at the beach as a rocky beach, and I normally would just see like gray stones everywhere. But for some reason that day, when I looked at all the rocks, I noticed that some of them were kind of pastel colored. And so I started collecting all of these pastel colored rocks, and then I made a rainbow out of them. And for some reason, I just like found like some hope, like, oh, okay, I'm not looking up anymore, I'm looking down, but there's a rainbow. And it just turned out, like, a few days later, I found out I was pregnant. And so I felt like, was it a sign? I wasn't sure, but I wanted to believe it maybe was some sort of divine universal sign or whatever, that maybe things will be okay.
So it wasn't just the loss of the baby and the miscarriage that Taisha had been grieving for the previous year. It was also the shifting of her faith. The destabilization, the questions about what parts of her life she had chosen and what parts were a result of the belief system she was now unsure about. It was obviously a lot. A lot of reorienting and searching for new boundaries and struggling to find meaning in her suffering. And while it looked like she might have found some hope that day on Whidbey Island with the stones and the colors and the rainbow, it wasn't necessarily the light turning on and the color flooding back into her life.
It turned out a couple weeks later, when I went for the ultrasound, things weren't okay. In the same, like, nightmare, really. Like, it would have been my nightmare to repeat what happened, and that's exactly what happened. So I had another missed miscarriage. That time, though, the wait and see worked out.
Taisha and Jacob decided to homeschool during the pandemic, and it was during one of those busy homeschool days that the silent miscarriage finally became loud.
So here I was, like, teaching homeschool with the five kids, and I started miscarrying like in the middle of homeschool. So I'm like back and forth from the bathroom, and I didn't really want to stop for the day, and I kind of wanted to ignore what was going on. And that was rough, and it really spiraled me like to a not good place, in the sense of I got really depressed after that. Like, I felt like I wasn't sure if I should hope for anything anymore. And then it complicated my rainbow idea. So yeah, that was hard. And it was, again, it took probably another year to kind of really, not like I was moping around the house for a year, but like personally and at night in particular, it was my grieving time. And I just would grieve. I didn't know how to make it better. I didn't even know if having another baby would make it better. And I didn't want to have another baby just to fix broken heart, or whatever you might want to call it.
But the loss also opened Taisha up to other possibilities. Enough time had passed that their youngest daughter was not a baby anymore. Potty trained and more self-sufficient, it made some of their family activities a little easier, not having to plan around nap time or manage quite so many tantrums.
I was finally coming out of that time that was really dark, and I kind of also was at the point where we didn't even really have a toddler anymore. Like, we had no diapers, and everyone was sleeping through the night. And suddenly, I was like, this isn't so bad. So I took advantage of it, and I started, like, our family is really outdoorsy, and we love to hike and camp and backpack. And it just was so much easier to just, like, hop in the car and go do something. So I started actually doing some things for myself, which I hadn't done for years. So I started doing a lot more intensive hiking. Like, I would take one day during the week. And because of COVID, my husband was working at home and my kids were old enough that, like, if I left for a day, they could manage themselves. You know, like, he was there if there was an accident or something, but for the most part, they could manage themselves. So once a week, I would go on, like, an intensive all day long hike. And I had a couple hiking buddies, and I decided to train to do a through hike that would be like a 28-mile through hike in like 24 hours. I was feeling good. I had actually not felt comfortable in my body for those years of the miscarriages, and I didn't trust my body anymore, and I just had a lot of negative feelings toward my body. But once I got back in my body and I was moving it and going places I wanted to go and seeing these beautiful mountain views or, you know, whatever it might have been, I got to trust my body a little bit more and I was feeling more comfortable.
It had been about 4 years since they had decided to try for another baby, and Taisha was nearly 45. The fact that she was able to get out and experience things on her own, do things she wanted to do, feel more at home in her body, all of it was healing. And with the passage of time, Taisha was feeling more comfortable with the idea that maybe the sixth baby just wasn't going to happen. While they weren't taking precautions, they also weren't really hopeful. The idea of a vasectomy came up, but really the only step they took was to clear out the baby supplies.
So we donated, like, pretty much almost all the baby stuff we had left, and we were just kind of, like, embracing what we had and being really thankful that we had five healthy, happy kids.
It seemed as though maybe Taisha was ready to move on and think past the baby stage of life and catch up on some of the things that had gotten lost in the pandemic and the grief of the previous years, like a mammogram.
So I was like, oh man, I'm 45. I better go get that mammogram. So this was in, I think, about January or February a year ago. And I went in and, you know, they said, if they call you back, if it's your first one, they're getting the baseline. Don't freak out. It's pretty normal to get called back. But of course I freaked out. They called me back. I was really nervous about it. I think I was especially nervous because when I was a little girl, our next door neighbor died of breast cancer, and she was around my age and she had three kids. So when they called me back, you know, I was really nervous. But then it got worse. Like, they said, oh, we need to do a biopsy in each of your breasts. Is something suspicious, something different from the other, like two separate things. So I'm like, what are the odds? So I actually said to them, I have five kids, like, I can't die. And that's what was going through my mind. It was kind of dramatic, but that's how I was feeling. I finally went back and I had each biopsy done. Thankfully, it came back okay. Like, I was fine, I was in the clear. But the anxiety that I had, like, for that whole probably like 3 weeks was just kind of crazy. So fast forward to probably around April. So because of the biopsies, everything was tender and my husband and I were pretty like hands off, except for one time. I didn't think anything of it. And then I missed my period and I was like, I bet it was stress. Like, I'm almost very regular cycle.
It took a few more weeks before Taisha was able to entertain the thought that maybe, just maybe, she could be pregnant.
But then I honestly didn't want to know. Like, I thought, well, if I am, I don't want to know because if I have another miscarriage, I just don't even want to know about it. Like, I just don't want to know. So I let things go on till 7 weeks, like past when I should have had my period. And I finally told my husband, because I hadn't told him. And he's like, you should take a test. I was like, I don't know if I want to. So I actually took a test. It was on Mother's Day. And I knew I was taking a gamble doing it on Mother's Day, but I just decided, why not? It was positive. And at that point, I was feeling nauseous and, you know, some of the pregnancy symptoms. And I'd kind of been in denial. But then I was, I don't know, mixed emotions. Like, you would think I'd be ecstatic, right? Like, after everything that had gone on. But I actually felt pretty traumatized. So I just didn't want to get excited or connected until I knew things would work out or not.
Over the next few weeks, she met with her midwife to date the pregnancy. They decided she was 10 weeks and had basically missed the first trimester, and to do genetic testing since she was a little older. The tests all came back normal, and they found out they were having a baby girl as well. A bit of news that was healing to Taisha, who had had a sense that their last baby would be a girl. Things were looking really good. But when it came time to do the anatomy scan at 20 weeks, Taisha was pulled up short again.
You know, I've been in a few of these before. Everything seems to look pretty good. I'm not too worried about it. But then when I went to the follow-up with my midwife, she said, well, there was a couple of red flags. And I was like, are you kidding me? And it was something I never would have expected. Like, it wasn't, well, we didn't know for sure what it was at the time, but she said, there's a persistent right umbilical cord, which may or may not be an issue. And then there is a little bit of concern about the kidneys.
Taisha described the kidneys as being bright and oversized, but what it actually indicated was unclear. She was referred to a maternal fetal medicine doctor for more information and more detailed scans of everything.
That was a little bit scary. We also had to talk to a genetic counselor. Now that freaked me out because, I mean, her job is to basically tell you every scenario there is, from the worst to the best, and to look up pretty much like medical journals that might have some information that may or may not relate to your case. So she even asked us at one point, are you want to continue the pregnancy? And I was like, yes, like I do. Why would I not? Like, we don't have enough information to terminate a pregnancy just because our kidneys are bright or oversized or whatever. I even asked her at the end, because of course I Googled everything that I knew and found out way too much information. That was really scary. I asked the genetic counselor at the end of our meeting, what about mother's intuition? Like, what if I feel like things are going to end up being okay? She's like, listen to that. She's like, I've been doing this for 20 years and definitely listen to that. So that made me feel a little bit better.
For the rest of the pregnancy, Taisha had a monthly scan on the baby's kidneys and an echocardiogram to monitor the umbilical issue. She says if there had only been the umbilical issue, there would have been virtually no concern. But with the kidney issue on top, they weren't sure if there could be an unusual trisomy. There wasn't much they could do except wait and hope. That, and make peace with the fact that when it comes to information, more is not always better.
And I was grateful, like, for the anatomy scans and how carefully they were watching my pregnancy. But also, it freaked me out. I felt like it was information overload, information that we didn't know. It was inconclusive. And I've talked to quite a few people that it's happened to them, where they had something show up and they were so worried, and then it ended up being okay. I mean, I also have had a friend who did have, you know, a baby with trisomy 18, I think it was. It was really sad. You know, they knew he wouldn't survive, and she chose to go on with the pregnancy. She even told me not everyone could do that. There's times when we do need all the information that we can have, and times when I wonder if it's just maybe a little too much.
With her own situation, it looked like the wait and see approach was, again, the only thing that was really going to be helpful.
Like, we ended up meeting with a pediatric nephrologist from the Children's Hospital and kind of talking with her. And it was always kind of the same answer. Like, it could end up being okay or really not okay. But we won't really know until she's born. And so I was like, well, should I be preparing for her to come home? Like, I, needless to say, it was like, I was happy to be pregnant, but I had a lot of anxiety and I wasn't sure what to expect. So I tried to think positive, and every time that I was feeling nervous about things, I would buy her an outfit. Because I was like, okay, she's going to wear this someday, you know? And we also had no baby clothes, so I needed to buy some stuff anyways. So I prepared for her, and but it really wasn't until like 35 weeks that I bought a car seat to bring her home. Interestingly, at 37 weeks, when I had the ultrasound, things looked with the normal range suddenly. And I was like, really?
It was a happy surprise, to be sure, and Taisha was happy to shift her focus from, is my baby going to come home, to, is my baby going to be born at home? She'd experienced precipitous labors, and so getting to the hospital in time, a 10-minute drive from her house, was an actual concern.
My due date was December 16th. That's what we finally figured out. So it was really close to that Christmas time again, which I had mixed feelings about, but I was like, I'll take it. So I actually had ended up shifting my focus to, because we also celebrate the winter solstice. So I was like, actually, the due date's closer to winter solstice. So I'm going to think of her as our solstice baby instead of our Christmas baby, because it helped me mentally kind of shift things a little bit. I woke up and I had, I think that's a contraction, you know, and it was like 30 minutes till the next one. So it was, I'm like, oh, we could have a baby within an hour. But then it stopped. It kind of went away. And then I told my husband, because like, thankfully he was working from home, right? Husband, why don't you be the substitute teacher today? Like, give them something to do. Well, I just kind of rest and we'll see what happens.
There was a lot of anticipation that morning as contractions came and then went. She checked in with her doctors around noon and fully expected to see them the next week. But then around 5 p.m., Taisha felt like yoga might do her some good. She got on her hands and knees, did some stretching, and had a contraction. 15 minutes later, she had another, and that was her cue to head to the hospital.
Pretty much, we got there, they did the COVID test, they started filling up the tub for me because they knew I wanted to be in the tub. I got into the tub for like 30 minutes, and then I just like plopped out and had her. Like, there she was. Like, we were there 45 minutes, and everyone was kind of like, wow, that was fast. And I was just so relieved. Like, she was small, but that's normal for me. My babies are usually pretty small. So she was like 5 pounds and 14 ounces and 18 inches and healthy. I mean, as far as we could tell, right? No sign of distress. She looked great. I felt good. I was just like ecstatic. Like, I was just so happy and so relieved.
There was still some concern, of course, about the kidney issue. But further examination showed it to be a minor problem, most likely to be resolved by the time the baby was a year old. If not, a minor surgery would fix it. And so there it was, Taisha's feeling, her instinct, that things would be fine. As Taisha and I talked, we really got into how tricky it is to hone in on the important, necessary information when there is so much other noise. From the very beginning of her pregnancy, when Taisha started to think that maybe her late period was more than just stress, she was hesitant to take a test because knowing she was pregnant would make it that much more painful if it ended up as another non-viable pregnancy. Then there were the decisions about which test to get and what to make of them. With mixed results and unclear prognoses, would it have been better for her mental health to just not know?
I've thought a lot actually about women who lived in earlier times, who didn't have all the information that we have now, who didn't maybe even know how to prevent pregnancy, didn't know when they had. I mean, we often know when we have a miscarriage because we have ways to test whether we're even pregnant or not, right? Like those early miscarriages, if it was back in those days, I probably wouldn't have known necessarily that I had early miscarriages.
An effect of having all this information is that we have to learn to balance it with our own instincts and awareness of ourselves and our bodies. Sometimes having that information can create distance or mistrust in our feelings. But sometimes it gives us the opportunity to understand what we are really capable of, to know that we actually can be in charge of our lives, our bodies, our families, that we can trust ourselves.
Well, I found it was really interesting too with my midwife at the hospital. Like, she did something that is pretty normal for a midwife to do, which is not check you, right? like she checked when I went in for like freaking out, like, is the baby okay? But later when I was actually in labor and I was like, should you check me? She's like, no, like, you know what to do. And that was so empowering to me because no one checked me. Like, they just let me do my thing. They completely followed my request of having low lights, getting in the tub, like all that. And then I got to like regain my sense of, I don't know, not that I have control, but just trust, I guess, in my body that I knew what I was doing. So I told her later, like, I really appreciated that she had that response. Like, you know what to do. You'll know when to do it.
Taisha found that having care providers who listened to her and trusted her while she labored was incredibly empowering. But now that the baby is here, she is in some ways on her own as she faces some of the results of having her baby when she did, at the age she did. Remember, she thought that age 40 was probably the latest she might want to have a baby. She was 45 when her baby was born. And on top of that, she's left with 5 kids pretty close in age, with one tagging along, 6 years behind. What does she make of all that?
So it's interesting because I think it varies a lot on the location you live, right? So we live in the city of Seattle, like in city, and it's very common for people to have their first pregnancy in their very late 30s. In fact, the midwife told me that they kind of joke that a teenage pregnancy in Seattle is once you're, if you're under 30. I think, you know, not all of them have to do IVF. Some of them do. A lot of people have one, maybe 2 kids. I mean, I have friends who have frozen their eggs. I have friends who've done surrogacy, all of those things to have their family at an older age. So I didn't feel particularly old here. Like, I actually just felt lucky that I was able to get pregnant naturally and that also my baby was healthy overall. You know, she has her little kidney issue, but I think it will be fine in time. I mean, and also we have a big family for someone who lives in the city here. We don't know anyone that has more than, like, I would say people consider 3 kids a big family here. But surprisingly, I mean, people are super cool about it. I think it's almost novel. Like, they don't see it very often. So they're like, wow. Like, you hear the whole, like, are those all your kids? But people say it, like, genuinely, like, really? Those are all your kids? That's cool. I've had people message me too, other friends saying, you give me hope because, you know, I'm older and I'm not sure if we'll be able to have another one. But even though it took a while for you, like, maybe it'll happen for me too.
It may not be something she thinks about too much now that she has made it through the medical diagnosis of advanced maternal age. But something she does have to grapple with frequently is the fact that she has 5 kids who are well beyond the baby stage. While she feels conflicted that she can't always give her kids the emotional attention she wants to give them as she focuses on meeting the needs of an infant, what worries her more is how this last little girl might fit into their world as they grow up and leave home.
I was kind of nervous about it. We loved having the kids close together before. I think I was more a little bit fearful because in my own family, which happens to be a blended family, there's a 5-year gap between the his, hers, and then ours. She was the only one that my parents had together at the end, and she was 5 years younger than everyone else. Like, she felt kind of like an only child in a lot of ways. So when she was 5 is when I went to college. And after that, like, every year, pretty much, every year or 2, someone would leave home. So she ended up feeling super alone. So that was one of my fears with our situation. I don't know. But I think overall, I'm just trying to embrace it and realize these are my babies. I'm going to love them. I really hope that they have really good sibling relationships as they get older. I feel fortunate that they truly are friends. I'll just keep hoping for the best and loving each of them.
There's a lot about raising her family that Taisha will need to feel out in the coming years. And there is a lot that she has been through and is mostly behind her. She has crossed a threshold and entered finally a place where she feels like her family is complete, that they are all here. But there is still a lot of grief to process, a lot of changes to adapt to. I wondered what she sees as she looks back. Would she do anything differently?
Probably would have been good to, like, seek some help, like professional help, like a therapist, counselor. It was interesting because even though, like, my mom had had a miscarriage, actually, hers wasn't like mine. She couldn't understand why I was, like, spiraling and had such a hard time. And so maybe talking it through with someone. I was trained to be a therapist. So in my head, I knew all these things. But in my life, I was like, I don't care about those things. Like, I just wanted to curl up into a ball. I'm the one who needed to be on board, and I wasn't. It's hard, right? Looking back, it's much easier to say, but when you're in the moment, sometimes it's hard.
Tysha was sure that her husband Jacob did everything right. He encouraged her to get the help he didn't think he could provide, and was there in the ways that he could be. And she also knew that it could have been worse, more serious. For example, she had never thought of hurting herself. She just needed time and space.
That's one thing I have always reminded myself of, like, during different points in my life, is like, time is on your side. So maybe right now doesn't seem great, but give it some time. And it's not to say it's going to be a lot better by this certain time, but just let time happen. And so that's what I did. I just let time happen. I also let myself grieve. Like, I knew I couldn't. I mean, I felt like, to a degree, I did have to hold it together during the day for my kids. But at night, I let it go. And I think also getting out into the mountains for me is a very spiritual experience and therapeutic. And so that I consider, that was like my therapy. That was my time to reflect. I call it meditation in motion. I never listen to music when I'm hiking or running. I just let my mind like be and kind of address the things that come to it. So that was helpful too, getting back into my body, because I was so much in my mind.
But if you'll remember, it wasn't just the pregnancies and the miscarriage and the unfulfilled hopes of a new baby that Tysha was grieving. There was also her faith, her trust and belief in God, and her trust and belief in herself. As her faith shifted and waned and continued to move, she found herself asking some really difficult questions. Like, did she even want all these kids? Or was it her church telling her that she should want them? Could she separate herself from a God and a church that she no longer believed in, when her God and her church had such a huge role in shaping her into the person she was?
You know, people will say when you're hurting or when you're, you know, the whole like footprints in the sand thing. Wasn't there for me. Like, I never felt any type of peace or comfort at all. And that was really like jolting and alarming. I mean, like I said, it wasn't like that experience. Like, there'd been a lot of things going on for years, but that definitely was like a kind of a turning point. And I had to question everything. And I would say that during that time, I became atheist. Like, I was like, done. But now I would say I'm hopefully agnostic. Like, I definitely believe there's greater things out there and there's purpose. But for a while there, I was in like a bit of an angry phase where I was just like done with it all. Like, so I do feel like I'm in a healthier place now. We're still like on kind of a journey of discovery in a lot of ways. But it's hard. It's hard when you basically built your entire life around certain beliefs or principles or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And then suddenly it feels like it's all flipped upside down. That's difficult. Even like with all of our kids, like, I would never trade them and I wouldn't change my mind about having each of them, because I truly love being a mom. Like that's not something I feel was like indoctrinated into me. It truly is how I was born, right? But I did have to go back and be like, well, did I just really want them all and that's why I felt like I should have them? Or did I ever feel some spiritual type nudge of that they need to come? Like, that's what I don't have the answer for it now. And once I felt like I did, it's the point of like accepting a lot of uncertainty and feeling okay about it. So now I'm feeling okay about it, but yeah, still a journey.
It clearly is a journey, a long journey, from little Tysha babysitting the neighbor's kid at age 7, to teenage Tysha choosing to care for her siblings above after school activities, to Tysha in her 20s hoping and preparing to be a mom someday, to Tysha in her 30s worrying and working as she brought those hopes and dreams into the world one by one, to Tysha in her 40s grieving, seeking, struggling, growing, wondering, waiting. It seems like Tysha has always known, always had a sense of who she was, who she could be, what she needed to be whole. In fact, there may have been a moment when Taisha was newly married that she had a glimpse of what her life could or would be.
So when we first got married, a friend had given us a gift certificate to a pottery barn. I'm like, what are we going to get a pottery barn? You know, we just barely got married, and it happened to be we got married in January, so all the Christmas things were on clearance. And so I was like, oh, stockings. Let's get stockings. So I got stockings for us and our future children. Well, at the time we had thought, you know, we'll probably have four. But then when I ordered them, I was like, I think I'll get an extra one, like, just in case. And then I paused a long time and I was like, how about one more? Like, just one more, just in case. And I did. So we had these 8 stockings. And so when we had that baby, that original loss that was due at Christmas Eve, stocking was ready. And so that was like so heartbreaking. Like, I had this empty stocking I've had for years. Like, we slowly filled each one. But with that original pregnancy, I had gotten a W for the stocking because I knew if it was a girl, we would call her Willow. I had no idea if we'd end up having a girl, you know, or not, but I always felt like we would. And so when I found out we were having Willow, I was like, there we go. There she is.
Thanks so much, Taisha, for sharing so much of your journey, your life, and your heart with us. Taisha also has a quick update to share. In the months since we talked, baby Willow's kidney issue has been fully resolved without any sort of intervention, and she has a clean bill of health. Many thanks to all of you for listening. We appreciate you and invite you to join us on Instagram or Facebook, or leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. Please let us know if you have a story you'd like to share. Thanks also to Valerie Best, Ryan Barnhart, Ben Howell, Ellen Barnhart, and Micah Heiselt, who is currently airbrushing our logo onto the underside of the Brooklyn Bridge.